So in this section of Bhagavatam, we are continuing the story of Hiranyakashipu, the great demon. And you can see this whole chapter is dedicated and is so long that it must be very important to glorify the qualities of a demon. Normally, the demons are not pretty much liked by anyone. But Prabhupada explains in the earlier verses that Hiranyakashipu was not just an ordinary person or just a demoniac person. He was actually a very learned person. He was very much fully aware of the Shastric conclusion. And he very well knew that the Lord is the Supreme Personality, and there is no one any higher than him. But somehow he was under the illusion that he can defeat the Lord simply by his outwitting the Supreme Lord. So we have heard the pastimes of how Hiranyakashipu did a lot of austerities, and then he got a benediction from Brahma that he would be immortal. In other words, he cannot be killed by any different forces. He met so many conditions that he thought that he covered every single angle, and he was now fully protected. And that's why he became so powerful and was so masquerading all over the three worlds, and he conquered the three worlds. But he knew deep down the conclusion. And that is why he is reciting the story of the king when he dies and his wives are lamenting. And they are lamenting for the body and not the soul. So in this verse, we see very clearly that Yamaraj, as a young boy, is saying that even a foolish person, a common man, can understand the difference between a dead body and a live body. It doesn't need to be a great scientist, a PhD, to figure out the difference between a dead body and a live body. But nonetheless, when some near and dear one leaves his body, we lament for that person. Now, are we actually lamenting for the body or the person within the body? Because generally, even though when you have information from the scriptures which explains the difference between the body and the soul, but just knowing this knowledge is not sufficient to act on that platform. If that was the case, all of us know very clearly that by practicing Krishna consciousness and coming to Krishna consciousness, we've heard the philosophy, we've read it in Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, we heard different speakers speak about it, the difference between the body and the soul. And we also, in our preaching, we talk about the difference between the soul and the body, and how the soul is transcendental and is spiritual in nature. The body is material and temporary, and it sort of deteriorates over time. All these things we preach. But when it comes to actually physically putting this knowledge into practice, it's very difficult. You know, when it's extremely cold, we feel cold. If it's hot, we are bothered and frustrated. It's intolerable heat. We are hungry. You know, we cannot feel comfortable unless you satisfy your hunger. So many things are done on a bodily platform. But then in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spends quite a lot of time explaining the very nature of the soul. The soul doesn't get hungry, the soul doesn't get cold, the soul doesn't feel heat, the soul cannot be cut into pieces. It is beyond the material concept. So then why are we so much spending time and energy onto satisfying the body rather than the soul? So Prabhupada explains that just knowing this knowledge is not sufficient. We have to understand this concept of the soul and the body being different through the process of Krishna consciousness and through the process of self-realization. That's why Prabhupada places a lot of emphasis on science of self-realization, that how these realizations come. But this realization doesn't come simply by reading the Bhagavatam or by hearing from someone. It comes from our practice of Krishna consciousness and purification of our consciousness. When we are free from all this material contamination, then this realization is there. Because the soul is always there, The soul is always pure. Soul cannot be contaminated. But the soul, because it is associated with the material world for many, many, many millions of lifetime, it has so become used to it that it thinks, it begins to think that this is the very nature of the soul. The soul is the body, is material. And it acts on that platform. So all of a sudden, when we come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, then we hear all this knowledge. It is not an overnight process that, you know, you read once and then you say, oh, I'm not this body. I'm beyond this body now. The very next second, we act on that. Because we are so attached to this body that it is very difficult to give up the attachment for this body. I'll give you one example. That's some years back, we were going around India with our traveling bus and preaching. But one time, one person told me that there is a very famous Hanuman temple in Ahmedabad. And every Saturday, almost from 5 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, no less than 150,000, 200,000 people come to pay their respects to Hanuman and pray to him and make his offering and everything. So I thought, this is a very good opportunity. So many people are coming here. All we have to do is just set up our book table there and encourage all these people to come and buy the books. So there we had, you know, we had set up our bus and set out all our paraphernalia and books and everything displayed very nicely and waiting for the crowd. And you know, before we knew it, you know, halfway through Mangalati, we hear all this buzzing going outside. There's hordes of people coming, the early morning worshippers. And at 5 o'clock sharp, you know, all of a sudden it was just peaceful and quiet before 5. And all of a sudden, there's hordes of people just coming. And they're just coming for darshan. So we thought, this is a good opportunity for preaching. So we took the advantage. And then before we knew it, around 7 o'clock when the daylight breaks, there's a whole huge queue of beggars. Hundreds of them sitting in line, all size and shapes and all kind of suffering going on. They're with the little, you know, bowls and little piece of cloth spread around, hoping someone will give some contribution towards them. So there's a whole of this. So I told the devotees, you carry on and sell the books. I'm going to take a little walk and take darshan of Hanuman and take his blessings and then come back and then, you know, we'll go in turns so one, two devotees can go for darshan and then come back. So as I was walking down, I saw all these beggars. And I thought, there's so much suffering in them. And they've come here to a place which is a place of worship. You know, they were not hanging around some nightclub or something like that. They were hanging, you know, they were outside a temple, which they must understand that people who come to the temple have come to worship the Lord and His devotee. And these people are here, so they must have some knowledge. And there's this one old man, he was around about 60s, and he was suffering from leprosy. So he had no fingers, and his feet were almost no toes or anything, and he was suffering, and he was bandages all over him. And his little metal bowl in front of him, and a packet of bidis, you know, these Indian cigarettes. And, you know, he was struggling to pick one up with his palms, because there's no fingers. Put in his mouth, and then he's like holding a, you know, match and trying to light. And I was thinking, this man is suffering, he has no fingers, he has no toes, and his body is such a terrible state. So I thought, let me go and talk to the guy, you know, at least tell him to give up his smoking, you know. So I started speaking to him. I said, you're suffering. Don't you see you're suffering? He said, yes, it is part of life. I said, there is something you can do about it. First of all, you're increasing your suffering by smoking, because already your body is in such a terrible state through leprosy, and you're smoking these bidis, which is not a very good thing, because it creates, your lungs will collapse in time because of nicotine and all sorts of tar building up in the chest. And I explained to him the whole thing. And he said, yes, that's okay, but no, this is enjoyment. This is my enjoyment. I said, your body is all falling apart. Don't you think it's time that you think about giving this body up and pray to the Supreme Lord that He frees you from this suffering, and then you get a better body next life, or if you're lucky, you can go back to the spiritual world. And see, that's true. That's very well and true, but still, this is my enjoyment. I was trying to convince him to give up his smoking, and he couldn't do it. He was so attached. And then I said, "You're suffering so much. Don't you want to give up this body?" He said, "No, this body is still good." So I was thinking, you know, such illusion that, you know, he's in such a suffering situation and he can't give up, you know, thoughts of his body. But he knows pretty much that the body and the soul is different. Because generally, you know, in India, this is common knowledge for everyone, you know. Just like here, in the verse, Yamar is saying that you are all foolish people. You are lamenting for something that you see is right in front of you. Can't you see the difference between the two? And they all know that the person is gone, because not just in India, but anywhere in the world, when someone dies and we go to their funeral, they say, "Oh, he or she is gone." So they know for a fact that the body is still lying in the coffin, either ready for cremation or burial. But the statement which they make says very clearly that the person is gone. So they know the difference. So they even after knowing this knowledge, why we are still acting on the bodily platform. So someone who is grossly immersed in a world of ignorance, has no spiritual knowledge, has no access to spirituality, we can understand that he is acting on a very gross platform. But once we come to a devotional platform, then why you're still acting on that platform? Because the more and more you act on the material platform, the more and more you will be attached to the body and the bodily needs. The Prabhupada actually explains that in the process of Krishna consciousness, we should try and minimize the bodily needs. Whatever is minimum requirement to live a very simple life is what we should be practicing. So Prabhupada made the statement, simple living and high thinking. So our thinking should be very basic, very simple, down to earth for basic human needs. But beyond that, we should not be spending our time and energy for that. On the contrary, we should be thinking very high. And what is our high thinking? Is the process of Krishna consciousness, which makes us go beyond thinking on a very, very simple level. But what is happening now is that as we become more and more blessed by the Lord's mercy, and more facilities are at our disposal, we become more and more bodily conscious. I remember when we first joined the manor, you know, we were living very much, although manor is a very opulent building, but financially we were not very well off. It was a big struggle. And practically there was no heating in the whole entire building. All we had was an old boiler in the cellar, which works with oil and wood. And half the time it doesn't work because the cellar is flooded with water. So the boiler doesn't work. There's no heating anywhere. And most of the windows had half the windows missing. In a freezing cold winter. The devotees were still enthusiastic and fired up. And they were not thinking, let us make our situation better and comfortable. They said, whatever the Lord has provided is fine. But as we get more and more prosperous by Krishna's mercy, and Krishna is giving so much more opulence, we become more and more living a life of luxury. So we find that once we start making all these comfortable situations, then we lose our goal because we are so comfortable. You know, for example, Prabhupada describes this material world as a prison house. And prison house is not a pretty place. So someone who has been in a prison in some one of these third world countries or somewhere where human rights are pretty much completely violated, somewhere like Taiwan or China or Vietnam or some of this place where the jail is terrible. It is a stinking hole, you know, with 4 or 5 or 10 people in one small cell, and it's infested with rats and everything, and the food is practically rotten food they give you. And you don't want to stay too long in that jail. You know, you would do your best to get out of there. You know, in fact, you are always planning to break out of there somehow. If opportunity is there, you break out and you're off. Because you know this is a terrible situation. But the jails in the Western countries, which have a very, you can say, a more human rights protection, then the jail is like a five-star hotel, basically. I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, there was a huge article in the newspaper. Come Christmas, the government was cutting down the Christmas gifts to the pensioners because of the financial crisis they were going through, and so many things were happening. And the old age people who really worked hard through the war years of the Second World War, because now, you know, this age when they're old, they were pretty young in their when the war was going on. So they were thinking, we fought for our country, and we contributed to the country's welfare through our hard work and tax and all these things. And the government now is turning the face away and cutting our pensions and giving our Christmas bonus thing, you know, is chopped down. But the prisoners, they were spending specially £25 per head for Christmas dinner. Just one dinner, 25. And of course, nowadays 25 is not so much, but in those days, £25 was a lot of money. And if you think about it, that the poor pensioners who are hardworking, they have been chopped off from their pension. But the prisoners living in the prison, they have done a crime against society, but they are getting a special Christmas dinner, which is £25 per head. And if some of you have been unfortunate enough to go to one of these prisons, you will understand how nice it is in there. Because unfortunately, I had the experience of going to jail. And of course, so it wasn't through criminal offense, so don't think I was a criminal. It was in the process of expanding Prabhupada's mission that while we were preaching, we got caught for doing something which was not quite legal, but at least from our point of view, it was quite legal because we were trying to save these drowning souls in the material world. So we thought anything is fair game to save the fallen souls. Anyway, so we were jailed for a week. And then for 1 week, the first day, we didn't touch any foodstuff we offered because it was all mixed with meat products and everything. So I said, no, we can't touch anything. No, we are devotees and we have a special diet requirement. So the next day, a special dietitian came and asked us, what is our requirement? So I said, well, you know, we are pure vegetarians and we don't eat onion and garlic and all these things. So they made a note of everything. And the following day, the meal they gave us was a nice vegetarian meal without onion and garlic. And then later on, one other counselor came to counsel us and talk to us and said that we have facilities here for leisure, so you know you don't get bogged down in one small cell. So they take us to a gym where we can do exercise and all sorts of things. And then another counselor came and saying, your basic needs, do you need alcohol? Do you need cigarettes? So you get a quota of 20 cigarettes a day and 2 pints of beer a day. But of course, you can't drink at any time. There's the leisure time when they give you to drink. So I said, well, yeah, you get 2 pints of beer a day, 20 cigarettes. You get your food of your quality, what you want. You go to the gym and do workout. And then you go in a nice warm cell and just crash out. No problems. In the material world out there, you got to go early in the morning, 5 o'clock get up, get down to the bus stop, freezing cold, jump on the bus, go to your work. And then the foreman is on your case, hey, get working, production. And your anxiety and hard working after weeks of hard work, Friday afternoon the guy comes with a little pay packet and gives you a pay packet. And practically half the pay packet is already gone by that time because you've already taken, you know, money from different people to pay through the week's expenses. And you're struggling. And these guys are living it up. So, the analogy I'm trying to make here is that this so-called prison house is very comfortable. So anybody who is in that prison house will feel, why should I go out in the material world where I have to work hard, pay taxes, and I don't get any enjoyment because there's no time for leisure. And here is all first class. We have a television where we can watch movies we like or sports or whatever we want. You have a gym where you can do a workout, you get food you want, and you know, you have your fulfillment of your intoxications. What do you want? You don't have to do hard day's work. Obviously, the guy is feeling comfortable. Just like recently we heard that in Bangalore, where our devotees are taking food to the prison. So the prison have food is so wonderful now because it is cooked in very good consciousness and it's good quality food stuff. That some of the prisoners who are let out, they go and do another offense to come back just to have a nice meal, because outside is tough to get a meal and here is a nice rice dal, sabji chapati and a sweet to go along with it. You know, and a common man in India, he doesn't get to eat sweets every day. It's only like a festival time when they have some sweets, you know. Otherwise, it's just down to basically, you know, simple dry chapati and whatever sabji you can buy in the marketplace. It is not even cooked properly because you don't have a cooking facilities and so many problems. But here is first class, hygienically cooked sada, which they're getting, you know. So they are quite happy to go back into the prison house. So when our situation becomes like that, when we get all these comforts thrown to us by the mercy of the Lord, the Lord is very kind and compassionate. So we try to make our situation very comfortable. And we live a comfortable life. But then when we're living a comfortable life, what happens? Our living becomes very high. And our thinking becomes very simple. So simple living, high thinking, we do the other way around. Our thinking is very simple. You know, chant Hare Krishna. You know, but I'm living my life. So when there any hardships come, we can't face it. So we go and complain to the authorities. Well, the showers are broken down, you know, and we have to have cold showers now. You know, get the boiler fixed. And, you make a big scene out of it. In the old days, there's no question of, you know, getting this the boiler fixed because there's no boiler. Just go in there and take a cold shower and you're out. But you have to accept it because when you come to Krishna consciousness in those days, you could see that the facilities which were... Jai Shri Radha Gokulana ki jai, Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Gaunita ki jai. So the facilities which were there were very simple. And if you read Prabhupada Lilamrita, you see Prabhupada, such an exalted Vaishnava, pure devotee of the Lord, you know, but how much difficulty he went through in the early days. In what conditions he was living. And he was not complaining about those conditions. He was actually saying, this is such a first-class opportunity to preach about Krishna consciousness. If you read that Lilamrita, when Prabhupada went to New York, he met this so-called high-class guru, you know, dressed in the normal army civil clothes. And he told Prabhupada, Swamiji, you have come to America, this is New York, this is a city of opportunity. There's so many things you can get here. But I advise you to leave this Bowery area. Go upstate. You will get rich disciples. And you'll get all the facilities. And you'll be living it up. And what did Prabhupada do? He rejected this guy. He said, I have not come to take anything from here. I have come to give here. And what I've come to give is Krishna consciousness. It is a precious gift. It is priceless. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is known as the most munificent incarnation of the Lord who has come to save the most fallen. So these people who are suffering are the most fallen and they are the candidates who will appreciate Krishna consciousness. Because when you are suffering and someone comes and shows you a little comfort, you will appreciate it very much. But if you are living in a 5-star hotel, you know, and all the luxuries at your disposal. Even someone comes and shows some affection towards you, you know, you're not going to take it as a great thing or great benediction. But when you're suffering and someone comes and shows some affection and tries to relieve you from your suffering, you'll appreciate it much more. So Prabhupada went through so much difficulties. And then he wanted to give Krishna consciousness to everyone. Then again, we see how Prabhupada, I can give two examples of Srila Prabhupada's simplicity. That when he was in Bombay, and all these rich life members and very rich industrialists were calling Prabhupada to come to their homes for having programs. So some of the devotees suggested to Prabhupada, that Srila Prabhupada, now we have got access to funds and we are a little better off than before. It is befitting that we buy you a Mercedes car so that when you go to all these programs, it will be befitting a great Vaishnava. And of course, in those days, to get a Mercedes car in India was not very cheap, because it was, as it is, the car was very expensive to buy. You had to buy it from abroad. There was no Mercedes available in India. And on top of that, you had to pay 400% tax on it. So, it costs like, 5-10 times the normal price of a Mercedes. And Prabhupada said, there's no need for a Mercedes. All we need to do is go from A to B, just buy a simple ambassador. That ambassador is still there. So Prabhupada was not thinking, well, Krishna has given us so much money, let us get a top-class Mercedes now. Because after all, I am a pure devotee of the Lord. And, I'm the object of worship of so many thousands of people. So I must get a nice car because it is befitting a great personality. No, Prabhupada was saying, we don't need this. What we need is some facility which will facilitate our preaching. And if ambassador does the job, why have a Mercedes? So Prabhupada was very simple in his thinking. Then another example I give how Prabhupada's simplicity is, that most of you may have been to Mayapur. As you enter the front gate, on your left-hand side, you see Prabhupada's bhajan kutir, which was the first little mud house constructed with thatch roof where Prabhupada stayed, because there was nothing there. It was just a paddy field. And as Internal Society was expanding, and lots of money was coming from different devotees from different parts of the world to develop Mayapur. So they built a nice building to facilitate a temple for Shri Radha Madhava. And then along with that, some rooms for the devotees to stay. Because Prabhupada wanted to make Mayapur a wonderful grand place where hundreds of thousands of devotees can come during Gaur Purnima and fulfill the desire of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that they would come and celebrate Gaur Purnima and chant in the streets of Navadvip with all devotees from all over the world and show the world that this is a unique process of Krishna consciousness which is meant for all living entities, not for any caste, color or creed. So Prabhupada's rooms, if you look at in Mayapur, in Lotus Building, Srila Prabhupada's room is a very simple room. And if you have been to Prabhupada's room, you see, it's just a regular room, just like any other rooms in Lotus Building. Nothing, any special additions to that. And Prabhupada was using the bathroom up the corridor, which is common bathrooms. Prabhupada didn't say that, I am now, a big acharya. I've got money, I've got thousands of disciples. I want my special house with all the special facilities. Prabhupada never asked for these things. Prabhupada says, whatever Krishna provides, we accept that. But our business is to spend whatever we get for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, not for ourselves. But in the process, that if you spend something for the, suppose you make a very grand temple for the Lord, and you get a little corner in that grand temple, then that is the Lord's benediction upon you. But you build a beautiful grand temple for the Lord, and then you build your own grand kutir, which is equally opulent, then Krishna is not going to be looking to you very favorably, because Krishna says, you want to stay in a 5-star jailhouse, no problem. I will create a 5-star jailhouse for you, where you are comfortably living there, and you will be so attached to this situation, that when the time comes to give up, never mind giving up the body, you won't be able to give up the place of your residence, because you're so attached to this material world. So we should be freed from this. And we see that those people have been to pilgrimage in India, in Vrindavan. So there was a grand temple built by Sanatana Goswami for Radha Madan Mohanji. And Rupa Goswami built a beautiful temple for Shri Radha Govindji. But nowhere in those two grand temples you'll find living quarters for Rupa Goswami or Sanatana Goswami. Now they could have said, build myself a nice little kutir here And Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami were not just ordinary persons. They actually came from very aristocratic, very wealthy family. So they were used to living in fineries and luxuries of life. But when they decided under the instruction of Mahaprabhu to go to Vrindavan and renounce all these things, they gave it all up. They renounced everything to preach Krishna consciousness by example. So similarly, we should see that in our practice of Krishna consciousness, when we are practicing Krishna consciousness, we should be following in the footsteps of these great examples of acharyas who have set for us, that we should be in the same spirit and the same mood. Only then, as I said in the beginning, that just knowing the knowledge that I am not this body, I am the spirit soul, is not going to be sufficient. It is actually practicing the process of Krishna consciousness which will bring realizations, and through those realizations you will then able to understand the difference between the body and the soul, and you will be more acting on the platform of the soul rather than the body. Because it is not the body which we want to deliver. It is the soul we want to deliver from the clutches of this bondage. So if you follow in these footsteps of great saintly people, then we'll reach our goal without fail. Otherwise, what will happen is that we'll be living, like I said, a first-class, five-star prison house. And you're quite happy. You don't want to go anywhere. Because you don't have to work hard and you get all your provisions provided for you. So it is up to us to understand that whatever is given to us, we should accept it with a proper responsibility. Because see, when people come to the temple, they come here, they see the beautiful temple, they see the darshan of the spiritual master, they take darshan of the lordships, then through their inspiration in their heart, they put some donation in the box. Now, they are not putting this donation for you and me. They're putting this as an offering to the Supreme Lord. So we should be taking that this offering which has come to the Lord's lotus feet, it is for their pleasure. Not for your and my pleasure. So as soon as we begin to think that, well, you know, I am also a devotee of the Lord and I need some requirements so I can put my hand in there and grab something, then it is not going to be a good position to be in. Because we see the story of Sudama, who was given three little bags filled with chickpeas, one for himself, one for Krishna, one for Balaram, when they went out into the forest for picking firewood for the yagya and other requirements of the ashram. And what happened? Sudama ate his chickpeas and he thought, well, you know, Krishna is there and he won't mind, so let me take his share. And he ate his share and he dipped his hand into Krishna's share. And what happened to his situation? He was put through terrible poverty. So in other words, if we take something which is not ours, then it is stealing from Krishna. So we should be very careful that we don't fall into this trap to justify whatever we take in the name of that it is required from our preaching and our basic requirement and needs, but it is stealing from Krishna. And Prabhupada, we see in his own example, he didn't say, I want so many things for myself. Whatever was provided, he was simply happy and satisfied with that. But for Krishna, he wanted very grand things. He was always interested in that. And this is what Prabhupada is teaching us, that whatever we get, it should be done simply for the pleasure of the Lord and as an offering to the Lord. Prabhupada says very clearly that to satisfy the Supreme Lord, we should give him the best we have. We should not compromise in any situation. Although Krishna is not in need of any of this, because he is living in his Aishwarya planets with all these hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis and unlimited wealth at his disposal. But just to give us that mood of renunciation and detachment, we offer everything to Krishna. You know, it's not like, you know, one for you and one for me, one for you and one for me. If that's going to happen, then you know, we are pretty much making an arrangement to stay in this material world for many millions of lifetimes to come. The reason we have come to take up this process of Krishna consciousness is to go back home this very lifetime. Don't want to come for another lifetime here again. Unless Krishna himself decides that I want you to go back to the material world to execute a particular mission on my behalf, that's a different matter. But otherwise, just to come back to finish off the unfinished business is not recommended. So we have to be very careful that we don't fall into this trap and make our lives comfortable. Because just like in this purport and this verse, he's saying even a common man understands the difference, but they are not doing anything about that. But at least when we come to a devotional platform, and when we have this knowledge, we should be doing something about that. We shouldn't be making ourselves so comfortable in this material world that everything is nice and comfy, and you know we don't want to leave this material world. We become so attached to this world that it is difficult to give up. Because at the end of the day, in order to go back to the spiritual world, you have to be detached from all these material attachments. Even the smallest attachment will bring you back to the material world. There is no room for any attachment. That is why this process of Krishna consciousness is a process of detachment, not an attachment. So, it's 8:30, we'll stop here. If anybody has any comments, any questions...